What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of The Bullpen. Today, my guest is nothing short of a pure legend in the entrepreneur space out here in the United States of America. I mean, true, like I have been dying to get to know this guy. The fact that he's here on The Bullpen, I can't wait to pick his brain. Every single one of you need to perk your ears, get ready, because I've already heard just bits and pieces from this guy, and I always get so much out of it. So I can't wait to just dive deep with him. Let me just give you an idea of who our guest is today. Just give you a little teaser. Our guest is a New York Times bestselling author, partner at a high performance institute, and passionate entrepreneur. His favorite thing in the world is to help grow companies and people. Based on what we were talking about before, is probably what, some one of the things he is best at. As a partner and Tamarack. All right, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing that. Tamarack, our focus to help, their focus to help build durable and purposeful companies. He works closely with some of the world's most recognized CEOs, companies, and thought leaders and experts. I don't want to say your name yet. I want to make sure everyone knows. He has been awarded the Entrepreneur of the Year and he was ranked top 40 under 40 entrepreneur. Guys, top 40 under 40. That is, as an entrepreneur, that is huge. He's also mastered the art of customer acquisition, marketing, sales, and how it's related to a lifetime customer experience. My man here is serial entrepreneur, investor, and a leader. He also has a wife and six kids, two sets of twins.
Let's go.
To dive in. Randy Garn, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate you. Let's get that one down. There we go. Thanks for coming on the bullpen, brother.
I love it.
All right, the legend, Randy Garn. You're on the bullpen, brother. I can't wait to pick your brain. I know I was telling you that before, but I really, you know, obviously, you know, I've heard nothing but great things about who you are as a man, about what you've accomplished as an entrepreneur. Obviously, your accomplishments and, you know, life you live speaks for itself, but I just can't wait, man. But listen, at the end of the day, I want to know how you got here, man. What's your story? How did Randy Garn become Randy Garn? Break it down for us, brother. What's your story?
I love it, Jay. This is awesome. Dude, it's great being on the bullpen.
I'm excited.
And, you know, as I prep for this, just thinking about what's going on in our world right now, in our country right now, and I think my story is this. I grew up in a small little town in Idaho. Mm. Sugar City, Idaho was a sweet place.
Sugar City, huh?
My dad was a high school football coach.
Yes.
And for a little over 30 years. And he was freaking a legend.
I was about to say, let's shout that out. The winningest football coach in Idaho history, right?
Yeah. I think he has more winning records than anybody else in Idaho as a coach.
That's huge. Yeah.
And I think for me, what really shaped who I am, and like I literally like think about the potter's clay, mm-hmm. like what really shaped and molded me was an amazing father and an amazing dad, and taught me how to work. And we had a horse ranch, and he was a high school football coach. So I mean, we were up early, slopping the hogs and waking the chickens.
Right,
like we were up at 5 a.m. Yeah. and doing things. And so
you were a bull rider back in the day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I did ride some bulls. I rode some bulls at the Ricks College Rodeo.
We got a rodeo guy here. All right, good.
So I mean, my nickname in high school is the little ball of hate. That's what it was.
Yes, I love
so
it.
You'd got to get after it.
Little ball of hate.
I really do. I think what shaped me is that an amazing dad that was both held me accountable and helped me understand choice and also pushed me to greatness. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was like, I literally was like 15 years old. Some of my friends were making horrible, horrible decisions. And I am literally out at the ranch. I'm in the white Dually truck.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there on the vinyl seats. My dad's out doing fans. And I'm in a spot where I'm like, I'm going to make a decision in my life where I'm going to go this way or I'm going to go this way. Mm. Am I going to choose a path of greatness or am I going to do a mediocre path? And I remember thinking like a cheese grater on my heart. I remember the song came on. It's one of my favorites still to this day. Travis Tritt, I'm going to be somebody someday.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not kidding, dude. I like sat in the truck and I listened to that. And I mean, this is back in the day when I just had the AM radio. We're out there in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden it was like God just poured into me. He's like, Randy, you're going to do great things in your life. And I remember thinking about that like 15 years old. And just like, dude, do not settle for mediocrity. And I remember that song is like, dude, I'm going to be somebody someday. One of these days I'm going to break these evil chains or whatever that those lyrics are. But even when I think about it at that time, when I was like 15 years old, just like it lit a fire in my heart. It lit a fire in my belly. It lit a little candles in my eyes being like, you know what? I'm not going to follow this set of friends. I'm actually going to move myself to doing better. I'm not going to worry about what they think. And so I think from that day, it's amazing how one conversation can shift things forever. And I remember my dad coming back in and, you know, I was having a moment. And I was having a moment like self-reflection at 15. And I do think that's important, like you and I as role models and leaders, like with youth, like the ages of 11 to 15 are like, those are ages of impact. Mm-hmm. We got to be conscious of that. And that was a time of impact for me. And then I talked to my dad. I'm like, Dad, what am I going to do? And he just listened to me. And he literally is like, still to this day, I was just with him this weekend. We went kayaking, we went fishing. Still to this day, he's a legend to me because he's always been there for me. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, that was that little moment in time sitting there in the middle of nowhere with just me and God, like just thinking about who I'm going to be, that changed everything.
Do you think was that something that your father like kind of instilled in you? Or do you think that was something that kind of came from God a little bit more? Like, was that something your father pushed, like you're going to be great kind of thing?
No, it definitely came from my dad and my mom. I mean, they were seriously a part of that.
Yeah.
And then other really great role models in my life, you know, other great men, and watching my older brothers they were just champions as well. And so I think some of that is what we need today. Exactly. Like just fathers that are in forging like fortitude, grit, hard work, faith. You know, I think that it's so important. So right now, like one of my biggest focuses, how do I be the best husband? How do I be the best father? And how do I be the best business partner? Those three things are so important to me. And so I think that moment shaped me. And then from there on out, you know, I also committed to myself that I was never gonna want. And that I, with my own two hands, I've always been an entrepreneur. And I think at that point too, I actually started my own business and then never looked back from there.
Oh man, dude. Like what you're saying just gets my heart fluttering a little bit, you know? If I were to say one, the biggest problem in this country, what's making America fail is a lack of fathers.
Yeah.
I really believe that, you know, like to me, fatherhood is the highest calling on earth. Yeah. More than a king, more than a president. Yep. Being a father is the closest to God you will be. Yep. Of literally what is who God is. He is our father, right? And to be a father is a sacred mantle, right? And like, dude, I'm just, do you know anything about like what my story with the whole thing? I don't know if you know this.
I don't know enough about it, but dude, if you could elaborate.
Let me just give you an idea.
I'm with you here, dude.
You're like when you start, I'm just like getting fired up because. Yeah. I was 11 years old. My nickname growing up was the Fat Bull. I was bullied heavily, dude. Heavily. Every day it felt like, you know, I was getting beat the shit out of me. Yeah. For years this was happening, right? You know, they'd pin me down, pour chocolate milk down my throat and say the Fat Bull needs his milk. You know, just getting the shit beat out of me at school, right? Yeah. Group of five or six kids doing this to me. And one day at 11 years old changed my life forever because I am who I am today because of my father. My father was hard on me in the best way. Yeah. I could not be happier with how hard on me he was and how much he pushed me because at the end of the day, I knew how much he believed in me and how much he wanted to see me succeed. And it was one day in particular where I walk home, you know, chocolate milk all in my hair, just feeling defeated because this has been happening for years, right?
Yeah.
And my dad pulls me aside, you know, and just this frantic, my mom's freaking out, you know, she's like freaking out and something snaps in my dad. He pulls me aside and he said the words that you see out there when you walk in, he said, "No one's coming to save you."
Oh man.
And he said, "That's okay. Cause you're all you need. So you're going to have to be the hero of your own story." And then he proceeded to kick me out of the house and said, "You can't come home until you beat one of those kids up." He says, "You're going to either be great or you're going to be nothing." And so he did. He kicked me out of the house. You know, I'm short version. I went over out of the most fear. Like I was literally puking all the way over there. Found one of the kids just because I felt like I had no other option. He gave me no option. Yeah. Beat the shit out of him. Came home all of a sudden feeling like I did it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden realizing I can do it, you know.
Yeah.
And he instilled in me from that day on, whether it was from football or anything else, is you're going to be great or you'll be nothing. Because this idea of average and mediocre is false.
Yeah.
You know, when you do nothing, you are nothing. When you average, it's the most selfish thing you'll ever do because you're just doing enough to take care of you. And all these people who just sat around and watched you get beat up your entire life, they're average. And in all reality, they're nothing because there's a lot of suffering in this world. And if you want to make a difference, you have to be great. You have to choose greatness. You have to actually be somebody who can make that impact. That's literally the whole premise of why I started this business after football with Alpha and, you know, the everything with it was based around that message, helping people make more money, helping people, you know, just get out of their situation so they actually can step up and be someone to make a difference, right? So that's why when you're saying that story, you know, about you at 15, I'm just sitting here like, oh, dude,
you know,
it's getting me fired up, man.
Well, it does. It brings back. It's like those moments in time that you can never forget. Mm-mm. And I will tell you, it's like mediocre people hate high performers. Mm-hmm. High performers hate mediocre people.
That's true.
I mean, at High Performance Institute, it's literally like, dude, let's maximize. I love to suck the life out of every single day.
Yeah.
Like every drop that I have breath.
Yeah.
Is like, I'm going to do the very, very best that I can. I'm going to give it everything I caught, everything that I've got.
Yeah.
And my dad, one of the things that my dad instilled in me was he said, Randy, do as much as you can for as many people as you can, as often as you can, and never expect anything in return. Mm. And I always thought about that. I was like, okay, do as much as you can for as many people as you can, as often as you can, and expect nothing in return. That's kind of how I've lived my life. And now I've got, I can only wear one pair of pants at a time. I can only eat so much. And now it's just like, I have so much abundance and so many amazing partners and so many deep relationships that just come from that one act that my dad taught me, is that I love life and I've got enough and I've got, and I want more and I want to keep, you know, changing the world for better. And so I think that we have to be wise. Like, that's why I love what you're doing on your podcast, is you're instilling and inspiring that role model mindset. Is that if you're stuck, you can take things into your own hands and you can be an innovator. You can be an entrepreneur. You can make a difference in your community, in your family, and in every single business relationship that you have.
Mm. Amen, brother. Amen. I saw the statistic recently that the United States of America leads the world in fatherless households.
Wow.
The highest, and there's also the just single family homes, single parent homes, but also fatherless. That's all of America. That's not just any one demographic. That's the entire United States of America leads the world in fatherless homes. And I think you see, and we talk, you know, you and me sit here, we talk about America and how much we believe in America. High performers love America because at the end of the day, America says it's up to you and nobody else to make, you know, your destiny come true, right? Yep. And that's why we're so passionate about freedom and what we have here. Yep. And then we see it get shit on. Yep. We see it just getting destroyed. And I think I truly believe one the cause of that is that we rely on, we think the government's going to make the solution. You know, we think we're looking on both sides, by the way, you know, both sides, y'all saying, what are we going to do about it? We got to set this and this and this, or we got to take away this. No. What we got to do is reinstill principles back into the home. Bring back the whole idea that being a father is sacred.
Yeah.
Being a mother is sacred. I'm going to get canceled just saying that. You know, like being a mother is sacred. This whole thing, we're going to get canceled for saying that somehow.
Yeah.
You know? And like, it's like, we wonder why we're suffering in this country. We wonder why it's getting bad and probably only to get worse.
Well, I honestly, like, I will tell you this. And one of my favorite callings of everything that I have is to be a father.
Yeah.
You know, I've got six kids. I've got two sets of twins. It's like Insta-family in my house. And everybody always asks, Randy, do twins run on your family? I'm like, yeah, they run all over the house. They're all over the place.
I was going to ask you that before, so.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy to think about there's kind of three things. There's homes without a father. Mm-hmm. There's homes with a father that aren't present.
Mm.
And then there's homes with fathers that are very, very present.
That's true.
And that's what I'm trying to be. Mm. I'm doing my best. In fact, I've actually really even leveled up my life that way. It's like, how do I double down on that? Because at the end of the day, it's our personal relationships with our family that actually will give you the greatest joy or the greatest sorrow in your life. So are my kids, how, when I leave this earth, what are my kids going to say about me? Mm. You know, what are those that I dealt with going to say about me? He was a good, good father. He was a good man. That's what I want more than anything in this world. I've been to a ton of funerals. I've lost some friends this over the last 2 years as well. And it's interesting to see that when the kids get up and they say, this was my dad. And you can't fake that. Mm. And at the end of the day, are we present as fathers? Are mm-hmm. we present as husbands? Because mm-hmm. for me, the relationship with my wife is the most important, even more so than my kids. Mm-hmm. Because if our relationship is strong, if me and Char's relationship is powerful and strong, and the kids feel that and see that, there's that trust, there's that unity, there's that love. And I will tell you this, that the biggest thing that I see, because I actually sit on some pretty powerful advisory boards and I work with some amazing business leaders, mm-hmm. the biggest thing that I see is too many men are trying to chase love and relationships. If you can get that right, I call it the home court advantage. Mm. It is the home court advantage. If me and my wife are strong and love each other and are powerful at home, I can be so much more successful in business because I'm not worrying about any of that stuff. Like when I'm out traveling or things like that, like I'm committed to her. And like, I can get so much more done because this is taken care of. Mm. You think about that. You think about all the people that are listening to this right now, like the relationship with that spouse or that man or that woman is so powerful. If you get that right, I call that the home court advantage. If everything's right at home, you can be so much more powerful in all of your business relationships.
Wow. I love that. Can I ask you now, maybe a little bit off topic of that, because, okay, so obviously, you know, you go through life and you're raised by, you know, a kick-ass father, right? Yeah. Then comes point where, you know, you're an entrepreneur, right? Yeah. Like you're building businesses.
Yeah.
Tell me more about your story there. Like, how did that whole thing proceed? Like, it sounds like you've been involved in a lot of businesses, but what really got that ball rolling?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, our first business was even at that day, like I've always been all about human performance my whole life.
Yeah.
Like, how do we be the best human we possibly can be? So when I was a junior in college, we won the entrepreneur contest. We wanted to start. Dude, this is way back. Like, this is 98, bro.
Well, you were an alumni from BYU and Harvard.
Yeah.
Let me just make sure everyone understands that. This man is a BYU an alumni from BYU and Harvard. Yeah. Continue. Yeah. Sorry. I just want to throw that in there, make sure everybody understands that.
Well, and that's the thing is like we really focused on at BYU. Mm-hmm. I was a student body president at the junior at Ricks College. Oh, really? And I ran against one of my best friends ever. And then we became business partners. And when we were juniors in college, I've always wanted to start my own business. I have never, ever, I mean, and that's a whole backstory, is that I always feel like if somebody else can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
I've always had that in my heart. Mm-hmm. And so I've always wanted to put my own destiny in my own hands. And so that's just, I don't know, I was just built differently. I was built that way, whether it's from my dad or whether God made me this way. I'm always like, if somebody else can do it, I can do it. Mm. But when we were juniors in college, we wanted to build the very first, this was back when coaching wasn't cool.
Yeah.
I wanted to build the very, very best online coaching and training company. And we did it in our business class. We won that competition. We got $5,000 and never looked back from that. And then for the next 13 years, we grew that company, you know, from 4 million to 30 million to 60 million.
So you legitimately took that presentation and ran with it and built a business.
100% for the next 13 years. Wow. And it was so fun. And so many people have spawned from that. I mean, we were back in the day. And then I flew out and I met with Nightingale Conant. You probably don't even remember them. It's The Strangest Secret. If you want one of the best tapes of all time, it's Earl Nightingale, The Strangest Secret. Everyone needs to listen to that. Mm. It's amazing. So we are doing all the training for Zig Ziglar and Dennis Waitley and Jim Rome. And so we actually had a whole training program, the very first on personal.
You were working with Zig Ziglar and Jim Rome?
Yeah, we were doing all of their training. I mean, this is back when I'm like 20. This is when I was 20, 25, 26, 27 years old and going out and landing these contracts. And then we got really, really good at the marketing. This is BG. This was before Google, right? This is all email and all of that. And so we literally grew that. And there's so much stuff that spawned from that, but it really changed me. I wanted to build a company that did good by doing good.
Yeah.
And everything we taught, everything we trained on made people better. And really helped with your mindset. Mm. And so that company just exploded. And then from there, we met so many of the amazing relationships that I have now. And it just kind of transformed. And that was a company that we ended up winning the Entrepreneur of the Year on. Because when they came in, like our energy of our culture was just like, dude, everybody rallied. Everybody's like, what goals are we going to hit today? How are we going to do this week? How many lives are we going to change? Every Monday we'd read testimonials. We'd share how impactful those things did. So, I mean, it was a really, really, really fun season of life that not only changed our customers and our clients, but myself personally.
Wow. Holy shit. Okay. So wait, so this is before, almost kind of before, we're talking like 1980s, 1990s. This is still before kind of internet and all that, right?
Yeah. Well, this, I mean, the internet was happening. Like this was not, we started at 99 of 99. Oh, gee. And that's what I'm saying. Like, dude, I'm an oldie, but a goodie. But I've seen everything happen.
Yeah.
I've seen 2008 happen. I've seen what's coming right now. And people, our company never dipped. Because what we were teaching and training, you need in all aspects of that. Mm. And it's literally like such a powerful thing. Now, this was before Instagram. This was before Facebook. And, you know, I think about how impactful that has been and also what it has done to grow in this entire space that we're in. The podcasts you're teaching, you know, people really writing books on the high performance, like from Mel Robbins to Brendan Burchard to Dean. Like these guys are all super, super amazing friends. That now this space is so hot right now, and it's one of the fastest growing spaces. The online education space around digital learning and human performance is about a $1.3 trillion industry right now. And it's growing like crazy.
What?
So it's huge.
Coaching space is a $1 trillion industry?
It's a whole online digital learning space, all of that combined. It's massive.
What in and the it's growing. World?
So, I mean, we were doing this back when that the coaching and training wasn't cool. And we literally, it's just been so fun to watch how it's exploded over the years.
Wow. Let me ask you this. In coaching, because there's customer acquisition, because you're talking about marketing and just really acquiring the customers, right? Because, I mean, you're talking about sending out, like, you know, mailer campaigns. You're talking about, you know, like
from direct mail, radio, email.
all these things. And then also their social media.
When we used to get an open rate that was 75%, we were like, good night. How do we get it back up to 80? I mean, it was amazing.
Wow. Okay. So obviously there's businesses, you know, like I own a supplement business. You know, like I only, and there's customer acquisition, those, but in the coaching business, customer acquisition and finding your target audience and that whole thing, maybe for a selfish reason, can you break that down for me? What's the key to finding your target audience, to finding really just your ideal client or even just customer acquisition in general in the coaching space?
Yeah, well, it depends on literally like who are you coaching? Mm-hmm. Are you coaching CEOs? Are you coaching business leaders? Are you, you know, is your coaching, you know, what's your format? Are you doing digital learning, you know, self-guided learning? Mm-hmm. And are you doing, you know, the group trainings? Are you doing one-on-one? Mm-hmm. And every time it's kind of that experience economy. One of my favorite books of all times is Joseph Pine, called The Experience Economy, where you go from a commodity to a good, to a service, to an experience, to transformation. Mm. So in coaching, if you can get to that place where it's not just a service, but you're actually transforming people's lives, that's when it changes everything for your business. And let me explain. If people like you, they'll listen to you. If they trust you, they'll buy from you. If they have an experience with you, they'll never leave you. But if you transform somebody's life, they will become a massive disciple of yours and refer tons and tons and tons of people to you. So why is it that somebody can do a $4 million business? Why is it somebody can do a $40 million business? Why is it somebody can do a $400 million business? It's because of that experience that you're driving and that delivery. And then when you get to a place where you're transforming people's lives, that's when you will take off as a company.
Wow. Damn, I love that. I mean, especially when we're talking like the inner web of, you know, how connected everybody is. Yeah. Things spread like wildfire. Yeah. That just clicked right there. Damn. Okay, so break this down for me. So you're obviously, you know, like heavily invested in, but you know, like here's what's interesting. You're heavily invested in helping other coaches with their businesses. Yeah. Have you had your own coaching program that you've launched?
Yeah, so with that company, we did.
So, it started out like as yours? Because obviously you've worked with like Jim Rohn, Zig Ziglar, Mel Robbins. Like, can you break that down for me and help me understand the difference there?
So that's why it's different, right? Like I sit on an advisory board and I really will work closely with about 4 to 5 people at a time. And really help them go really, really deep with their business. So it's more of scuba diving than it is just snorkeling with somebody. So I've actually found that for me personally, you know, we've written our book Prosper, and it's really kind of that balance. But for me, I love business modeling. And so I want to impact the CEO. I want to impact companies. I want to invest in companies that actually, if I can help that leader hire on 40, 50, 500, 9,000, 10,000 employees, that's what gets me the most excited. So I want to work with leaders myself personally. Mm-hmm. So that's my program. It's like, mm-hmm. how do I grow you? How do I grow, you know, an amazing, amazing leader? Even seeing some people at a young age, how do I help that individual grow so that they can lead thousands, millions of people to a better life, to a better product, to a better service? And so that's actually what gets me fired up more than anything. So, damn.
Dude, I love that. That's awesome, man. Yeah. Okay, let me pivot and ask you a new question here, okay? Because we're talking about coaching, we're talking about, you know, and with something you said earlier about talking about, you know, making a difference in other people's lives, right?
Yeah.
We're suffering as a country, right? There's a lot of really nasty things that we constantly see on a daily basis. And honestly, it's around the world. Yeah. You know, it's not just the U.S. Like, yeah. this is a mean and nasty place we're living in. I know, you know, it seems like for us, we may not see it, but if you really go even, you know, just to where it is, we can't even believe what's out there, right? You know, I don't know, remember like Tim Ballard and all, obviously, and all them, like, you know, I was actually just having a conversation with him about like what, you know, he's out in Ecuador. And I can't even listen.
Yeah.
You know? And to me, the people who are going to make the biggest impact are not politicians. Yeah. They're the entrepreneurs. Yeah. I'm curious to hear your thoughts about that, because I understand you're obviously, you know, involved in the political space, you know, like not really involved, but like, you know, you're very well connected, right? Yeah. But then you are like involved in the entrepreneur space. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how you think we're going to make a change, how we're going to make the difference, how we're going to make, you know, switch things back. Like, what do we do, Randy?
You know,
that's a loaded question.
You know, but yeah, I'm freaking passionate about it. So I'm not shy to answer it at all.
Yeah.
Like, we need leaders in office. We need entrepreneurs in office. We need people that have created jobs in office. This is my own personal opinion.
Mm.
And I really feel, I'm worried that the best leaders and the best men aren't willing to step up right now and do those things. We need it more than ever, and mm-hmm. it will happen. Watch what will happen. There's a really awesome book. Ray Dalio is one of my favorite, reads of all time. So if you watch the Changing World Order, that's a new book that he just came out with.
Yeah.
We just go in cycles. History repeats itself, and we've got to wake up. Like, the biggest thing always that drives joy in Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, is that what drives joy is the stretching and the becoming.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what we need. I don't want anybody to hand me down anything. And my greatest joy has always become when I do it with my own hands, with my own mind, with my own heart, and I can create value for somebody. I've never wanted to wait around for other people to give me anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to create systems that allow for that. And my concern now is that those freedoms that drive the greatest joy, mm-hmm. you know, are really waning right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that having really strong leaders in government and in business and working closely together to mm-hmm. ensure the free enterprise, this country was founded on freedoms. Like mm-hmm. the things that we have, it's like we came here for freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to be able to create and do whatever we want, freedom to be able to love the way that we wanted to love.
Right.
Like, I don't care what race, religion, or anything you are, but I do care about your freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
I care about your freedom of choice.
Yeah.
And let me have my freedoms too.
Right.
So we need leaders that actually understand that side mm-hmm. of it. And so I think more than ever that, man, if there are men out there that will step up and lead, and that actually are innovated, that have a heart, that are doing it for the betterment of the people, not for the betterment of themselves, that's what we need more than ever in this country.
Reestablish the fact that when you serve in political office, the key word there is serve.
That is a
position of service to your country. And right now I think it's flipped around where we almost think that we work for them.
Yeah.
You know, like we work for the politicians. As a matter of fact, it's the other way around. They work for us.
Yeah.
You know?
I love JFK when he said, ask, and I mean, just think of today. If he got up and say, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. That is the attitude we need to have.
Yeah.
That's the kind of leaders we need to have in there. is it's like, I don't want my government. I want my government to keep my freedoms, but I want to actually be able to create jobs. I want to be able to create ideas. I want to be able to be innovative. That's for me, that's what I believe we were founded on. And I want to get back to a place where we can really, really do that. And I worry about everybody. Like, my dad taught me massive accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, a good example, when I was young, my dad, I had prom coming up. My dad was going to let me use the car. I'm 16 years old. It's junior prom. And he's like, son, I need you home. I need you home at 11 o'clock because we're waking up at 5. We got to go milk Blackie. We got to go take care of the horses. We got to go do some stuff. I said, Dad, I'll be home. He's like, you committed me. You'll be home like at 11. So I remember sitting out in the hot tub with Slick and Potato Head and some of my friends. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's freaking 11:14.
Oh,
and I'm like, I am freaking dead. Like, I am dead. I remember driving home. I'm like 10 minutes away. So not like 10, 15 minutes away. I pull in and all the lights are off the outside. I'm like, I made it. I sneak in the back door. I go in and I'm like, okay, my dad's asleep. I'm good. You know, I'm going to make it in time. I mean, he's not going to ever know.
Yeah.
I go and I don't turn on the lights. The moon's coming down. I go and I pull my covers back to jump in my bed. My dad is sleeping in my bed. So like, I'm like, dude, this is the kind of man he was, right? Yeah. He's just like, what time is it? I'm like, Dad, it's 11:26. He said, what time did you commit to me to be home? I said, I'd be home at 11. He's like, you don't get the car for prom. I love you. Let's say prayers together. And then we said prayers together. We went up to bed. You know, he didn't yell at me. He didn't get mad at me. But what do you think happened in the morning? I didn't get the car.
Yeah.
Like, he followed through with his word.
Yeah.
And I think that now in today's society, it's just like we're past the point of accountability and responsibility. And we have to instill that in our kids, in our country, in our jobs. Why do we not hit goals with our company? Why do leaders let, like, great leaders and great friends, my greatest friends don't let me get away with crap. The best leaders actually understand accountability, and accountability builds trust, right? And trust is what we have to be run on, that you do what you say you're going to do. And one of my favorite things is Brandon Steiner, always, he's the founder of Steiner Sports. You do what you did in life. Mm. You can't play business. You can't play fatherhood. You can't fake a diet. Mm-hmm. You do what you did. Mm. And so getting back to that place where my dad, he taught accountability. He didn't get mad at me. But I knew he was going to follow through with what he said he was going to do. Mm-hmm. And he expected the same from me. That's what we need more in leadership. That's mm-hmm. what we need more in business. And that's what we need more in relationships.
How do we do that? And I'm loving where we go. How do we establish more accountability with our leadership? Like, that maybe they're more accountable to us. You know, the voters, maybe they're more accountable for their actions. Is that kind of along the lines of what you're saying? And how do we do that?
We have to follow through. Like, we have certain rules and responsibilities, mm-hmm. and I'm all about actually ensuring that freedoms are sustained. But I think that even in those leadership positions, we've gotten to a space with even with work. Like, you said you're going to have that report done, mm-hmm. it didn't get done. Hey, that's okay. Let's get it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You start teaching your whole entire company that, or the whole entire country that, it is a slippery slope. So you got to have, and I always say, in any time I work with people, like, did you do your best? Are you committed to excellence? Can I trust you? Mm. Those three things I always ask people that I work with. Mm. Did you do your best? Because I know you're going to screw up sometimes, but are you committed to excellence? Are you committed to your best work every single day? And if you're not, like, you keep slipping. It's like my dad, hey, you said you're going to do this. Thanks so much for working, you know, with me. It's just not going to work out right now. You know, you didn't follow through with what you said you're going to do. We need that in the political sense as well. And that's really how you build amazing, amazing cultures and amazing, amazing leaders.
Why do you think you mentioned how there's a lot of men that you hope would run or hope would take office, but you don't think they will or they won't. Why do you think that is? Why do you think people won't? Like, entrepreneurs, you know, why do you think that people won't step into that sphere? Is because what they saw happen to Trump kind of thing and how he got shredded apart by the media? Or why do you think that is?
Yeah, I do think that we also are in a place where people can say or do whatever they want about you, and that you're guilty until proven innocent, or things can get blown out of proportion, or
The court of public opinion.
Yeah, the court of public opinion. So I think where that has really, really hurt us in wanting those leaders to step up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you did something back in junior high, you know, that you mess up, like all of us make mistakes. But it's like, how do you fight that? Like, you just have to not care. Mm-hmm. And you have to be like, okay, I'm gonna do my very, very best. So I think the thing is, we also need those leaders that are just gonna be like, dude, I don't care what anybody else thinks. I'm committed to excellence. I care about this country. I care about my business. And I'm just going to do the best that I can every single day and call it good.
When it comes to politics and when it comes to like what's happened in this country, it's really hard to not, excuse me, kind of feel doom and gloom. I mean, really, you see the riots,
yeah.
You know, you see what is being taught in schools.
Yeah.
You know, and I look at my generation. I'm 26, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder if our future is in good hands because I don't trust my generation.
Yeah.
You know, and I really don't know what to do about that except for hopefully inspire some to, you know, reinstill the principles that made this country, right? Like, I'm just kind of saying this because, like, you know, I see this happen over and over and over again, you know? Yeah. And then I see my generation. I see all generations really just – acting in a way that you wonder, can they even come back from that? Is there even a point to try and change them? Yeah. Or do you put your focus somewhere else? You know, like it's hard. It's this hard balance of allowing, you know, everyone to voice their opinion. And then at the same time, making sure, you know, like I think one of the biggest things that comes down to is social media is that you kind of allow people to state their opinion in the court of public opinion of what they're allowed to say. Yeah. But at the same time, what if lies are spread? So it kind of comes back to that accountability sort of thing of how do you hold people like that accountable? How do you even establish that?
I'll tell you what, I actually have more faith than in our country and the ability for us to get into a really good place than ever before.
Why?
Because of people like you. Because of inspirational people like yourself and like others that are standing up and voicing the exact things we're talking about right now. I have witnessed, one of my, a really, really close friend of mine is a guy named Rudy Rudiger. They did a movie about him and we just took him up and he spoke to over 200 young men. And when I looked out at their eyes, I was like, these guys are freaking tough. I do think that we have to be careful. I'm actually more positive about the future than I ever have been.
That's fascinating.
Because what's going to happen is we're going to go through some, I mean, we're headed in an interesting time economically, but guess what? Every time people have stepped up and innovation has happened, ideation has happened. We are strong. We are an amazing country and we actually have amazing men like yourself and that group that's like between 35 and say 15. That's the leadership that we need to work on. That's the leadership that needs to make a shift and needs to stand up for what's happening right now. And so I actually have massive, massive positive faith in the future and that things are going to be better than ever. And I'll tell you this, like, no matter how hard it gets with other people, if you're really, really super great as an entrepreneur and innovative, you'll find a way to actually make a massive difference. You'll find a way to create a product or a service or a training that people need during this time, and you will become wildly successful and wildly profitable. Uber was started during 2008, in the last economic cycle.
Right,
yeah. And you think about how many companies, I could name so many companies that in the last downturn, and I remember that day in October, I had tons of real estate, and all of a sudden I was just like, everything went out. But guess what? So many companies that we do now innovated. The last 2 years of COVID, how many amazing things have happened because of that? The way we teach, the way we train, your podcast, like the way we educate. I can actually now do trainings all over the world where before I would have had to fly to Chicago, miss my family. Like there's innovation that's happening. Mm. So my thing is that we are an amazing country. We're going to be okay. Mm. We're going to be, as long as we stand up and fight for the things like innovation, entrepreneurship, you know, free market, like those are the things that I care about. I don't want somebody else to have to hand me down anything. You know, the sooner that happens, like, dude, that's it won't happen because I will always find a way to take care of myself, my friends, and my family. Mm.
Okay, let me pick your brain just a little bit deeper on that. This like, oh, this is just, I'm grateful that you're saying this. I need to hear this. I know a lot of people listening to this need to hear this. Because let me go even deeper. Ray Dalio talks about the cycle.
Yeah.
And we talk about the cycle of republics in history, mm-hmm. right? You know, you can really any republic, you can always cycle it down to about a 200-year period.
Yeah.
And we're in that 200-year period here in the United States of America. And so there's the thought that, well, it's just natural. You know, this won't be a republic for much longer because it's just natural, it's just gonna happen. Do you believe we could break that cycle of 200-year, you know, republic, the death of the republic?
Yeah, because now also we have more education and more learning than we've ever had. Mm. Just think about all the research that he's done. Mm. And I do think that we're watching that now. I do think that we can break the cycle. I do think that there's going to be some people that you know, you've got to take courage. We really talk about, even in high performance, like there's 6 habits in high performance. It's to seek clarity is the very, very first habit. The next one is to generate energy. What is your energy around this? People that follow me are just like, dude, he's going to take us places. He's going to go. Like, I'm going to climb this mountain. Yeah, it's going to be hard, but it's going to be joyful. It's going to be fun. Mm. And we're going to, at the end of that, we're going to like be like, dude, we did it. We're champions.
Yeah.
Right? So what's the energy you have? The very last habit is to have courage. Is to demonstrate courage. And so what I want to instill in anybody that I work with is to be courageous. And I think that as we, as a country, as in a society, this is the land of the free, home of the brave, right? This is courage. And so I want to instill that into youth that I work with, into leaders that I work with, and that we haven't thought of the best things yet. So to continue to have a courageous heart is what I would love to have us. And I think if we can keep that, we're going to be okay. Mm. Oh, I know it sounds simple, but it's super profound. As soon as you lose hope, you lose all your courage.
Yeah.
You can't lose hope.
Yes.
I will not lose hope. Yes. I am going to be courageous, and I'm going to fight till the very end for my family, my friends, the businesses I work with, and the people that I get to associate with. Mm. And that we're going to be okay. Mm. You know, even if everything else goes like different directions and things like that, those that I associate with, that I choose to associate with, are going to be powerful and are going to be good and are going to make a difference, and we're going to have courage.
Oh, yes. I told you guys this would be, dude, I'm just getting fired up over here and just breathing that in. It's just, I love it. Because, you know, like something that I've been obsessed with my entire life is the idea of fear. Like, because, you know, I was very afraid, you know, like when I tell you that story, like I was getting beat up almost every day. I was puking my guts out as a kid because I was so scared, you know, and I obsessed over why I was so afraid, because I was embarrassed because I'm shaking, you know, I'm going to school or like they're coming after me and I'm like shaking and I'm embarrassed because I'm not tough, you know, I'm scared. I'm, you know, all this stuff. And that moment where my father instilled that in me was something that showed me how to push through fear like I never knew. And ever since, that's been an obsession of mine and before a football game, there's fear, you know, like there's fear, you know, you got 10,000 plus people, you know, or however many, you know, with college is way more and they're all chanting, you know, like whatever it is in business, you know, the cycles in business, and all of a sudden you've got salaries to pay and all of a sudden you start taking a dip in your business. You're like, I have to take care of my people. Like the fear that we experience, and then now the fear that we're experiencing, you know, has always been an obsession of mine. Where does fear come from? And at the end of the day, what I've come down to is the greatest people on earth were also the most afraid. The greatest people to ever walk this earth were also the most afraid. When I study the greats.
Yeah, dude, it's so true.
When you read the journals of someone like Marcus Aurelius, you know, or accounts from Alexander the Great, or even just someone like in sports like Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, and all you hear is how afraid they were. And the only fucking difference between them and the rest of them is that they just had one thing, and that was courage. Because courage is not never having fear. It's that you have more fear than anyone else and yet you still push forward. Is that when you have courage, it's because you have more fear. being overly courageous means you have a massive amount of fear. Yeah. So fear in all reality ends up being the cleansing fire that makes the difference. So all of a sudden we look at fear, like when you look at fear, that'll never go away. That all of a sudden you feel fear. It's because that's the cleansing fire to lead you into the next step of greatness. You can't avoid it. Yeah. So just accept the fact that when fear happens, it's because you're growing. And so I'm just hearing you talk about courage. I'm just like, yes.
Well, dude, and I think about your alpha brand. I think about it like you hit it right on. It's like fear is a reaction.
Yeah.
And fear is an emotion.
Yeah.
Courage is a decision.
Yes. Ooh, that's good.
And people will follow leaders that are authentic and being like, I'm afraid, but we are going to figure this out. It's where you're human, you're humble, but you're also courageous at the same time. You know what meek means? To be meek?
I love this.
Do you know what meek means?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what does it mean? Meek? What does it mean to be meek? I want to hear from you.
Well, I'm going to I'll probably
because quote friend's writing a book on humble power.
Yeah.
It's like humble leaders that are fearless.
Yeah.
But also are afraid are the most powerful. Like you just nailed it.
Yeah.
It's it.
Me, I mean, I would
what does it mean to be me?
I would quote Bruce R. McConkie when he talks about meekness is the greatest is meekness is the greatest of all and still being able to bow the knee before God.
I love it.
I mean, so I don't know if you have a different like way of phrasing that, but that's coming from, you know, like anyone who doesn't know Bruce R. McConkie is go look him up, right? When he described meekness. Yeah. When I thought of meekness before I heard that, I always thought of this, you know, like meek, you know, like almost timid. Yeah. Yeah. But then when I read that, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Meek means greatness
yeah.
and still humble at the same time.
So, I will tell you, want to know where my greatest courage from? And I may get a little choked up about this because I feel like our country was founded on the premise that there is a God.
Amen. Absolutely.
And I know two things for sure, and this comes from my buddy Rudy, that there is a God and I'm not him. Ooh. You know, and I think that my courage comes from I've already been through some stuff. Like I'm an oldie. I've already been through cycles. There's been 1,000 recessions and 1,000 recoveries. There's been 100 recessions and 100 recoveries, mm-hmm. right? My greatest courage comes that I'm trying to live as close as I can between me and God. And I've reconciled any wrongdoings that I've done, and I'm just doing my best. I'm getting on my knees every morning. I'm getting on my knees every night and asking God for direction. That's where my courage comes from. You ask me, like, what makes you courageous? Am I fearful? Yes, I'm scared every single day. Mm-hmm. I got 6 kids. Yeah. I got things right now I'm trying to figure out in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm asking God, and I'm seeking clarity. That's the very, very first one. And I think that once you do that, courage is being afraid but going anyways. Mm. People follow courageous leaders. The other thing on the other side on meekness is that I want to be strong. I want to have capabilities. I want to have good capacities. Being meek is actually being able to wield the sword but having restrained it. Mm. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yes.
That's being meek.
That Jordan Peterson, you should be a monster and have it under control.
That's exactly it.
That's meekness.
That for me is it. I want to be strong. I want to do things. I mean, I signed up for the Spudman. I'm like, I'm doing a couple Ironmans. I mean, I actually did the Kona Ironman because I wanted to like prove to myself that I could do it. Mm. You know, it's like, I know that if I got dropped off, if I lost everything, bro, I lost everything and I was dropped off in an island somewhere. And I have nothing left financially, you know, assets, everything. As long as you did not take away my friends and my family, I would be back up and running in 3 to 6 months. That's the kind of courage I have about my own capacities and capabilities to do things. And the reason why I have so much courage as well is my relationship with God and my deep-rooted relationships with really amazing friends, both women and men. That pump me up, that are there for me. Like even this morning, my daughter wrote me a note and just said, Dad, I'm cheering for you. You're amazing. And I'm thankful for you. That little thing right there, that keeps me going, that I'm fighting for something greater than myself. I'm beyond myself. Like, I'm like, how can I serve? Remember, do as much as you can for as many people as you can, as often as you can, and watch what will happen. That's how you have courage. clear with God. You're worthy of it. You're worthy of the assignment. You're doing your best as a father. You're doing your best to treat your business partners right. And you pick really, really good people that trust, that you love, like, and respect. A lot of people say, don't do business with your friends. I totally disagree.
Me too.
I only do business with people that I love and that are competent. Mm. That is where your greatest joys will come from. Mm. Why would we spend half of our life building something, somebody else's castle, and you don't love being with them? Mm. I don't agree with that. That's the way I live my life. And then I go home to my best friend, right? I'm trying to live that life of fullness. And I think a lot of people come to me. I mean, a really, really powerful CEO said, Randy, I don't know anybody better that's mastered the art of life like you have. And I really thought about that. You know, I try to be the best business leader I can. I try to shut things down on Saturday with my kids. I take them fishing, hiking. We go blow stuff up. We do really hard things. I take them on really hard stuff. Mm. And Sunday, I try to just focus on the family. And that way, I've always thought that, like, the winning for me is those that love you the most, want to be with you, want to spend time with you. That is winning.
Oh, my gosh. I have so many questions for you, but if I'm completely honest, I could not think of a better way to finish off the podcast than what you just said there. Like, seriously, like, this might be my favorite podcast I've ever done. Just pure, just wisdom, but at the same time, just what I needed to hear, at least. And I hope everyone listening feels the same way, but that's something that I needed to hear. So I'm grateful that you took the time to come on the bullpen today, brother. Seriously, truly grateful for you, man. I mean, God, thank you. Thank you for coming on the You're bullpen, awesome, Randy. Everyone listening, we're going to cut it off right there. What an amazing note to end on. I'm speechless, and I hope you guys are as well. Go follow this man on Instagram. Any other way people can get a hold of you if they're interested in learning more about what you do.
You can just go to randygarn.com.
Randy Garn. All right, website and Instagram, randygarn.com. Guys, if you haven't gotten enough value out of this episode, then I don't think you were listening. So make sure you go follow this man, because obviously he's done incredible things. He's going to continue to do incredible things. Randy, thanks, I appreciate you, brother.
You're the man, dude. Appreciate you a ton.